So it's I really, Rabbi Shulman knows needs no introduction. Of I hope I assume many, some of you at least are coming to his weekly shiur in Kohelet that's been going on since Elul, I think, and going probably at least until Pesach. So if you're
Pesach,
not
that's
a
our
big,
plan.
I'm sorry,
That's our plan.
that's the plan, right? And until Pesach, so that's every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central, because Rabbi Shulman lives in St. Louis, which is in the Central Time Zone. Being the rabbi of Young Israel of St. Louis already now for a number of years, and the founding dean of Yeshiva Kadima High School, a graduate of Machon Lev, and I guess we can give him a mazel tov. He just completed an MA in Jewish education that I did not know until about an hour ago. So I want to wish you mazel tov on that, adding to your educational repertoire and expertise. So pleasure to have you instead of your regular shiur on Kohelet joining our parsha shiur. Bakasha, Rabbi, it's all yours.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. Thank you, Rabbi Kelman and Torah in Motion for giving us this opportunity. And I actually, as I'm looking for the names of people joining, I see people from our weekly class, and I see people from other places and that I haven't seen or spoken to in a while. So it's nice to see familiar faces. And what I'm going to do is, if you don't mind, I have two screens, and I'm going to share my sources, and that's going to move you all over to the second screen. But I still see you, even though you're going to see just a screen of sources, I and my picture. I still see you on the second screen, so it's much easier for me if I'm speaking to people with cameras on. I appreciate the fact that not everybody wants to have the camera on, but if you can, it's certainly helpful. All right, and Gavin, I'll give you a shout out. Nice to see you. All right. I'm also going to mute everybody temporarily, but please consider an open mic, and you're welcome to unmute yourself to ask questions. And we're going to jump right in. Share screen. All right. We are good to go. Rabbi Kelman, you're putting the source page on the.
I have done that already. It's already
You
up
have done that.
in the
Okay,
chat box.
excellent. So that's the source page. We'll get to that in a moment. We're going to actually start from here, which is where I typically start from, which is the text in with the Hebrew English translation. And our goal is to take a look at the Ten Commandments as a whole, the Aseret Divot, kind of in a large picture. Structurally, I want to take a look at the structure of the Aseret Divot tonight, since that is the central piece of Parshat Yitro. And in particular, I want to focus my comments and discussion on the mitzvah of honoring parents, Kibud Avim, and perhaps a different, somewhat out of the box perspective on what the mitzvah of Kibud Avim is about. Not typically what we would identify, perhaps a new way of looking at it. Something which I learned from my Tanakh teachers, Rabbi Dan in particular, and I think its implications and applications are really quite extraordinary. So I just want to start with recognizing that one of the major subjects dealing with the Ten Commandments in Parshat Yitro and in Parshat Vayetchanan is understanding the structure of 10 statements, 10 utterances. We call them Ten Commandments, but they're not really individual mitzvot, because there's more than 10 individual mitzvot. Some of them have multiple mitzvot in one statement or in one concept or one dibra. But we call them the Ten Commandments, even though in Hebrew they're referred to in the Torah as Aseret HaDevarim. There's 10 utterances or statements. And typically we identify them and we divide them more or less into two categories, or into two groups. We know that they were given to Moshe on two tablets, on two luchot, and the two tablets were contained within the aron, in the ark. And so one of the questions that the Mefarshim raise, and you see it in the discussion in the Gemara, is if there are 10 commandments and there are two tablets, how are they divided? So we typically think of them divided very easily, right? You have the first five and the last five, and sort of in a our minds, because we have this picture of every shul that has a picture of the Aron Kodesh and the picture of the Ten Commandments on the Parochet or on the Aron Kodesh, So we kind of understand intuitively that if we have two tablets and we have 10 commandments or 10 statements, they are divided 5 and 5. And that's how we typically see them. But that is an interesting question. I'm going to jump for a moment into the source page and take a look at this text right here in this first box. Even without translating a word, I've just highlighted what we typically identify as the structural division between the two sets, right? The first five commandments, Anochi, Lo Yelecha, Lo Tisa, Zachor, and Kabed, right? I am Lord your God, you shall not have any other gods. Actually, that's typically up here with the end of the sentence, but we'll leave that for now. Lo Tisa, you shall not take God's name in vain. Zachor Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, guard the Shabbos. Honoring parents, and then we have the five that begin with lo, right? Not to commit murder, not to commit adultery, not to kidnap, not to bear false witness, and not to covet. Lo titzach, lo tinaf, lo tignol, lo taneh b'nechad, shaker, and lo tachmod. And that's how we would divide them. So this would be the first tablet, and this would be the second tablet. You understand which of these two tablets is physically, remember, they're carved, they're chiseled. So which of these two tablets is physically heavier? That's a trick question. Which of these two tablets is physically heavier? The one on the right or the one on the left?
The one with fewer words.
Correct. The one on the left, the one with fewer words. In other words, it's a silly question that reflects a very serious issue, which is, we divide them, but why would we divide them? And we divide them so unevenly. And that's such an interesting question in and of itself. But nonetheless, that's how we are traditionally taught to read them. And we have this medrash in Medrash Tanchuma that I quote at the top of the page that, and I apologize, this is the one medrash I forgot to put a translation to, but they, based on the description of the ark being five Amot by five, or the Kodesh HaKadosh, or I should say, Chamesh HaKot Arkova, Chamesh Amot Rochbo, five Amot length, five Amot wide, says the Medrash, Hem Kibluot Taluchot, Shekatub Behem Aseret Dibrot, they received two tablets that upon which was written the Ten Commandments, Chamisha Alaluach Hazeh, V'chamisha Alaluach Hazeh, five on one tablet, five on the other. So that's probably the clearest statement in the Medrash that we have, that we typically divide the tablets five and five. There are other ways to divide them, because this way kind of creates a very strong imbalance between the number of words on one and the number of words on the other. But nonetheless, that's how we typically see them. And if I could put it out there and ask for input, but I'm sure you will understand intuitively, we typically see these tablets as a series of mitzvot that what unites, what connects all the mitzvot on the right side, on the one tablet, is that they are all mitzvot, let's call them ben adam, as Chazal do, ben adam lamakom, between God and, between man and God. And the ones on the left are all commandments that are essentially social commandments, commandments related to how we relate to others, and we call them ben adam l'chaveiro. Okay. And more or less up until now, that's classically how we would see them, divide them, and understand this is the five that talk about our relationship with God, five that talk about our relationship with the other. I would, just as a comment, the other in this second luach, or second tablet, is never called chaviro. It's not called ben adam. We call it ben adam lechaviro. In the language of Tanakh, that would probably be better off if we called it ben adam lereo, or ben adam lereecha, because all of these are refer specifically to one's other, one's friend, right? One should not bear false testimony against reecha, against their friend, like reim ahavim. Lo tachmod beit re'echa, one should not covet one's friend's house. Lo tachmod eshet re'echa, one should not covet one's friend's wife. Right? This reference to the other is constantly referred to as re'echa, appears there four times, once twice, three, four times. One's here, 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 and here. So four times out of five commandments to refer to the other as Re'echa. So clearly we have mitzvot that are between man and God, and mitzvot that are between man and the other. Okay, in that case, Re'echa. And we'll come to the question, right? The question is a famous one. What about Kibud Av V'Em? What's Kibud Av V'Em doing in the bottom of this list? Honoring parents, how does that enter into the right-hand side? And we'll come to that momentarily. But if I look at this text carefully, there's something else that emerges. Besides the fact that this is a, why that these are so much wordier and so much longer, and these are so much shorter and so much more concise, there is something else that would tell me that this is a natural way to divide the these tablets. In other words, if I was looking for, rather than dividing them by the number of words and the balance between them, which essentially would be a different kind of division, there's something here that tells me structurally that this is one set and this is another set. And it's easier to see on this side, and then we'll come back to the other, right? What word jumps off the page and says, this is all five statements that are connected both in structure and style with a key word or key phrase that says this is a unit? No, right? That's not hard to see. Okay, they all are in second person, and they're all direct instructions of what not to do to the other. Lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo taneh b'reicha, lo tachmod b'reicha, lo tachmod eshet reicha, etc., 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 b'chol asher l'reicha. Right? This is all about how not to treat one's other. Okay? Now, I can't say that the ones on the right side are all positive mitzvot, because there are many that are negative, right? You shall not have any other gods before me, lo taseh l'chol peso, not to make any other idols. Not to take God's name in vain. Those are also negative, but clearly those are belong in a different category. They are between man and God. But what I wanted to point out is that if I look at this word lo, and I look at it as a kind of a perspective of key word or key phrase that defines all of the tablets on the left-hand side, if I were to look at the right-hand side, and ask the question, is there a phrase, one phrase, that jumps off the page and says, this phrase appears in every one of the five commandments on the right-hand side? Okay? What would
Shem
it be?
Hashem.
And I don't mean just the word
Shem
lo.
Hashem. Shem right? Hashem.
Okay. Shem Hashem is one part of it. That's true. Right? God's name appears in each one of these commandments. I would go one step further, and I would say it's Hashem Elokecha. In other words, it's not just Hashem, it's Hashem Elokecha. It's a reference to God's name in the context of a relationship with God, which has now emerged after and been identified after they've left Egypt. And walk through this with me for a moment, and you'll see it. Anochi Hashem Elokecha asher hotzeticha me'eretz Mitzrayim mi'beit avadim. I am Hashem your God who took you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Lo yalacha Elohim achim apanai. You shall not have any other gods. You shall not have any form, any idols. You shall not bow down to them. You shall not serve them. Ki Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem your God. It's actually the same phrase. Anochi. Hashem Elokecha. Zealous God, God who punishes, God who rewards for 1,000 generations. That's number two. Number three, you shall not take the name of Hashem Elokecha in vain. Okay, so again, for that same reference, you cannot take God's name in vain. It's not just Hashem Hashem, but it's because God is your God. Remember, right? Observe Shabbat. Shabbat l'kodesho. God, the commandment of Shabbat is because God created the world in 7 days. V'yom ha-shvi'i Shabbat la'Hashem Elokecha. On the seventh day is a Shabbat. Shabbat for whom? A Shabbat to declare our relationship with Hashem, your God. Hashem Elokecha. And similarly, in the end, kaber t'vicha v'yatimecha, in order, right, honor your father and mother, in order that you should have long life and long days on the land which Hashem Elokecha noten lach. So the phrase Hashem Elokecha appears in each one of these dibrot, almost to the point of saying that maybe that's in part why Kabed et Avicha ve'et Imecha was included on the right side of the dibrot. Here I've put it, I've highlighted that phrase for you, because every one of the dibrot on the right-hand side, meaning on this first tablet, all are defined in terms of our relationship with God, Hashem Elokecha. And so if the first luach essentially is defined as a tablet which establishes the covenant between us and the God, Hashem Elokecha, it's not just that God exists, but that he's our God, Hashem Elokecha, your God, then that would define the character of the first tablet, that which makes up the covenant, the brit, with Hashem, right? Then the second tablet essentially is a brit we create because of our relationship with God. We are now mandated to treat the other, re'echa, right, with a recognition that they are endowed with the spirit of godliness in them. And so I have a set of laws pertaining to how we relate to each other or to the other. So the first tablet is defined by the word Hashem Elokecha. And the second tablet, as much as it's about the law, it's about the no, but it's also about the re'echa. That's why I pointed out that this word re'echa is so significant, because it stands in contrast to the key word phrase in the first tablet, which is Hashem Elokecha. So the first tablet is defined as the brit with Hashem, your God, and the second tablet is defined as the brit with re'echa, the brit between each other as one people, as one part of humanity. Okay, so far, so good, right? I haven't really said anything we haven't heard before, just kind of structured it and organized it. Which raises, of course, the famous question. The famous question, which I want to zero in on now, is the question of honoring father and mother, kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, in order that you should have long days and upon the land which Hashem has given you. There are a number of questions about this dibra and what it's doing here, and they are, without any particular order, right? The first one is the most obvious, which is that if this is about the brit between us and God, and the left side is about the brit between us and each other, father and mother fit in much more closely with the other, re'echa, than do they fit into the brit with God, right? Our Hashem Elokecha, Kabed et Avicha ve'et Imecha, if I would say, if you didn't know anything about the Ten Commandments or anything about Torah, and I said, if I a commandment to honor father and mother, is that a social commandment or is that a commandment that defines a relationship with God? I think intuitively we would all say it's part of the social commandments. It's part of part two, which belongs over here. And so that's not my question. That's a famous question asked by the Gemara in Kiddushin, at least implied by the Gemara in Kiddushin, asked by all of the commentaries on Chumash, why is Kabed et Avicha ve'et Imecha here? Okay, that's the first question, and we are familiar with most of the answer. Like, classically, the typical answer to that question is because, right, as the Gemara says, I'm just going to jump to the source in the Gemara for a moment. Actually, you know what? This will be easier if I opened up this source page twice. Give me a moment. I'm going to do a little technical magic here. Sorry for that. Just going to do a little technical magic. Okay, I'm going to skip down to here. This question is asked by the Gemara in Kiddushin, which is, as you have it, in source 5, and the Ramban in source 4. The Gemara makes the observation that much of our relationship with our parents is characterized by our relationship with God. So, for example, Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, it says, Kaverti v'chaviyati mecha, honor your father and mother. And then in the same context, in a different verse in Mishlei, it says, Kabed et Hashem mehonecha, honor God with your wealth. Says the Gemara that the text of Tanakh links kibud avim to kvod makom, to this notion of honoring God. Kabed et Hashem, same language. Similarly, we have the phrase ish aviv imo tira'u, father and mother one should fear or have revere. And in the same breath, the same verse, it says et Hashem aluk, that's a different one. That's about et shabta taitishmor, you should keep my Shabbat. But the different verse says et Hashem alkecha tira v'yotot ta'avod, yira for father and mother, yira for God. Therefore, the Torah is equating yira for father and mother to yira for God. And finally, the Gemara's conclusion, there are three partners in the creation of the human being, shloshtan shutafin bo, man, God, man, father, mother, and God are all partners, physical and spiritual, in the creation of the human being. And that, says the Ramban, is the answer to, our most famous answer to the question of why is Kibud Av V'Em on the right-hand side of the tablets. Hinei shlim kol ma she'anachnu chayavim b'divrei HaBoreh be'atzmo b'chvodo. We finished the first four commandments that talk about our relationship with God. And now it wants to move over into our relationship with each other in the second tablet. Chazal etzavot otanu b'nyanei ha'nivraim, which in the next step of the commandments is to talk about the other. Hitchil min ha'av and em, it starts from father and mother, which in terms of one's birth, k'inyan borei mishtatef b'yitzira, that they are part of the process of creation just like God is, and therefore they have a place in that first tablet. Okay, so more or less that's the first question. But I would argue that there's more to this question, because it's not just about whether or not Kibud Av V'Em belongs on the right-hand side of the tablets. There's more to this question. For example, the notion, L'man ya'arichun yamecha al ha'adamah, that this is a mitzvah for which you earn, the merit is to earn long life and long days upon the land. That's not about Kibud Av V'Em alone. Think about that for a moment. If you read Sefer Dvarim, it's very clear the entire mandate of the Torah is to establish the longevity of the Jewish people on the land of Israel. We're talking about L'man Yerichin Yamech al Adama. Why should Kibud Av V'Em by in and of itself merit to be the one mitzvah in the list of the five on the right-hand side that earns us long life and good days upon the land which God promised to our forefathers? All the mitzvot promised to are part of that brit that God promised to have long days upon the earth, promised to the forefathers. So what does that mean, kaber tzavicha v'yatimecha, in order that you should have long life? Beyond the midrashic discussion about Acher, if you're familiar with that passage, or the fact that it's referring to the next world, and there's a lot of midrashic answers to this question, but in Pshat, why would Kibud Av V'Em be directly connected to this notion of Arichut Yami? That's question number two, and that we don't have an answer to yet. Or question number three, I would say, if you had to pick the five biggest mitzvot in the Torah, and I would close the book and I said, okay, we're going to brainstorm. The biggest five, put them on the table. All right, belief in God certainly merits to be one of the big five. Idolatry merits to be one of the big five. And we're talking only Ben Adam Lemakom, right? We're not talking about Ben Adam Lereach or Ben Adam Lechavero yet. We're just talking about between us and God. So, okay, I get idolatry. Why does God, the notion of not taking God's name in vain, get into the big five? So without getting into too much detail, that's more or less a foundation of the temple. The whole notion of the temple, the Mizbeach, the altar, Korbanot, everything about the temple is about the sense of God's presence and God's name, and that's where that lies. And of course, who would not include Shabbat in that list, right? And what's number five? Is number five in our list of the biggest five mitzvot between us and God, is number five honoring father and mother? That's it. You know what's not on this list? And I'm surprised. What mitzvah is not on this list? If you had to pick the top 10 mitzvot in the Torah, wouldn't we put the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, of learning Torah, in that list? Wouldn't we put the mitzvah Gemara says a number of midrashic sources that talk about Talmud Torah keneged kulam. We say it every morning in the Mishnah in Brachos. That Talmud Torah is equal to all of the other mitzvot put together. Talmud Torah doesn't, the learning Torah doesn't even get onto this list. It's not on the Ten Commandments. I will go so far as to say, actually, it's very hard to find the source of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah altogether. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But Kaberet Avicha V'Yatimecha, of all the mitzvot, that should be the one to merit to be put on this list? And also together, if we're talking about a set of tablets or a set of mitzvot that are defined by the key word Hashem Elokecha, how does that connect to our key word of Hashem Elokecha? You have to go around the bend. You have to say, honor your father and mother in order that you should get long life on the land which God has given you. In every other reference in this set of, in this first five, Hashem Elokecha is the subject of the mitzvah. I am Hashem Elokecha. You shall not have any other gods before me. You should only serve Hashem Elokecha. You shall not take the name of Hashem Elokecha in vain. Guard Shabbat because Shabbat is Shabbat of Hashem Elokecha. Kaberet Avicha V'Yatimecha has nothing to do with Hashem Elokecha by in the text. It's just in order for you to achieve long life so you can stay on the land which Hashem Elokecha gave you. So that's how it got into the right-hand side of this tablet. You understand the problem? Even the text, even the language here. Everything we said earlier is a mystery as far as this text goes. So I'm actually going to take a pause for a moment and suggest that on the one hand, I'm going to offer a different way of looking at the five tablets, five mitzvot on the right side. On the other hand, it's going to exacerbate the question about Kibbutz Av Ve'Em. Because, and this I heard from Rav Yoav Ben-Nun once, that the phrase Anochi Hashem Elokecha, who took you out of the land of Egypt, the house of bondage, isn't just one of the five. It's actually an introduction to the entire set. But if I look at that as a phrase, which is then concluded with the phrase, in order that you should have long life and long days on the land which Hashem Elokecha has given you, that forms a framework of the entire set. Of the entire tablet. Meaning, and here we're going to go to the third chart, if I look at the right-hand side this way, I have a framework. I have an opening and a closing statement. And the opening and closing statement reads as follows. I am the Lord your God. I am Hashem your God. Who has taken you out of the land of Egypt and the house of bondage. In order that you should come and have long life on the land which I, Hashem Elokecha, have given you. If I take that opening statement and that closing statement, then I have, in fact, a framework which is familiar to us. That phrase, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I, God, took you out of the land of Egypt, to bring you to the land and to give you long life upon that land, that's exactly the phrase with which God articulates the promise to Abraham over the covenant between the parts. I, God, took you out of the Ur Kasdim to be your God, to give you this land. And that's precisely how the Aseret HaDibot, the framework of this Luach works. I, Hashem God, took you out of the land of Egypt in order to bring you to the land which I promised to your forefathers. And in the meantime, that Brit, which is defined by the opening and closing statements, contains four components. Idolatry, prohibition against idolatry, service, temple, not to take God's name in vain, Shabbat as a way of acknowledging God as a creator of the world. And then for some reason, Kibbutz Ava'im is stuck into that list. So while I think it helps understand the entire structure of the Brit that is defined by Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem Elokecha who took you out of Egypt. I brought you to the land which I, Hashem Elokecha, has given you. And these are the conditions of that land. The prohibition against idolatry, the service to the temple, Shabbat, how Kibbutz Ava'im enters into the left to see. And then there's a social contract between us and the Re'echa to maintain that land. So that's more or less my question. Now we've sort of half the shiur on the question. Remaining amount of time we'll have to kind of begin to explore the answer. What is it about Kibbutz Ava'im that puts it into this category? Everybody understand what I've done? So I've spent the first half of the shiur kind of looking at the structure of this, the Aseret HaDibrot. I think structure is very important. You've taken any classes with me, you know I'm a very big, I like to focus on structure. I think it's very helpful. And this kind of structure, recognizing that the first tablet actually has an introduction and a conclusion that are connected to each other, links together all of those key words, Hashem Elokecha, that we talked about, right? This is the Brit with Hashem Elokecha, and it's a Brit over the land of Israel, which fits into the pattern of the rest of Torah as well. The one piece of this that I'm missing is why Kibbutz Ava'im is here. Okay. Having said that, let's move into the next question, which is the nature of the mitzvah of Kibbutz Ava'im. I don't want to jump now to the continuation of the source page and ask the question, what is the nature of this mitzvah? What is Kibbutz Ava'im? So we talked earlier about this notion of the three partners and why it's so important, the idea that parents are partners in the creation of the human being, but I'm still question, what is the nature of this mitzvah? And if I asked most people and said, okay, let's ask the question differently. To whom is the mitzvah of Kibbutz Ava'im directed? Who is the subject of that instruction? Not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the subject of the mitzvah is one's father and mother. But who is the subject of the command to honor one's parents? Or to put more succinctly, how old is the person to whom that mitzvah is talking to? Now, there are two possibilities.
13 and up. 13 and up.
Okay. So there are two possibilities. Either very young, right? When we are, how many times has we as parents invoked the reference to the mitzvah of Kibbutz Ava'im when we are disciplining our children? I'm not sure that's a fair question to ask, but I'll ask it. And how many times does a parent say to either their children or to their students in school, right? That's disrespectful, and you're not allowed to be disrespectful to your parents. I'm sure you've heard that before. So that's applicable to a child, a small child, 6, 7, 8, understands a little bit, right? But he's, and sometimes they have a tendency to be disrespectful. And we say to them, you know what? There are certain modes of behavior and patterns of conversation that's appropriate or not appropriate. The Gemara, that's one possibility. And the Gemara raises this question, interestingly, in a context of defining what is Mora and what is Kibud. The Torah has two terms for how we relate to parents. Kaber et avicha v'yatimecha, honor your father and mother. And ish aviv v'imo, ish imo v'aviv tira'u, to fear one's parents. So, or reverence for one's parents. So, what is yira, mora, and what is kibbutz? They both apply to one's parents the same way they apply to God. And so the Gemara goes on to say, it's Gemara in Kiddushin, that when it comes to yira, those are all the negative things we don't do In order to reflect the respect for our parents, we don't stand in their place, lo med bim komol. We don't sit in their chair, lo yosheb bim komol. We don't contradict them, lo soteret varav. We don't side with the other when the parents are involved in an argument, lo machri'o. I would add to that other halachas, like we don't call our parents by their first name, right? All the things that we don't do, because we want to have a kind of yira, reverence, respect of reverence, of fear for our parents. Then we have kibud. What is kibud? Kibud means ma'achil u'mashke, ma'bish u'machase, machnis u'motzi. To be kibud ave'em means to feed them, to give them food, to give them drink, to clothe them, to cover them, to take them out and to bring them in. Now, somebody made the comment before that mitzvah kibud av'em is for somebody who's 13 and a half years old. I don't know about you, but I don't think a 13-year-old is clothing their parents. Right? I don't see a child doing any of these things. So what is kibud av'em here referring to? If not, right, what's the flip side? If it's not a child, then who else could it be referring to? When do we provide food and drink and clothing and covering and take our parents in and out? Okay, that's not the things we do for our parents when we are 15 years old. Those are the things we do for our parents when they are much older. And the relationship flips. And then we, as caregivers to our parents, have to care for them, feed them, clothe them, cover them, take them places. All the stories the Gemara describes that, and you're familiar with the Gemara in Kiddushin, I don't kind of review the whole thing, but all the pieces of the Gemara that talk about all the various examples of Kibud Av V'Em, and how Kibud Av V'Em is the hardest mitzvah in the Torah to fulfill, and there's very few people on the planet who can fulfill it properly. They're talking about things that we do because our parents get old. And as our parents get old, they get weaker, and we have to care for them the way they cared for us when we were younger. That's the classic example of Kibud Av V'Em. And therefore, there's a certain year we have when we are younger and they are sort of in a position of stature. They represent authority to us. And so we respect that authority. That's yira. And as they get older, our obligation is to give them a sense of dignity in life. Kabed means to give them dignity and to feed them and to provide them with clothing and to take care of their medical needs. We didn't have old age homes and assisted living places in the time of the Torah. The children were supposed to be responsible for that. And so from that perspective, the mitzvah of Ave'em, Kibud Ave'em, is either to our children when they're young and they learn a sense of yira and a respect of authority, or kibud, which is really, it's not about respect in terms of how we talk to parents, it's about how we care for them. So from a purely halachic perspective, this statement really defines what is often misunderstood about this mitzvah. That's on the level of halach. But on the level of pshat, in the context of the Aseret HaDibrot, I come back to the question I asked before. And if we're talking about dealing with elderly parents, then ask the question this way. If this mitzvah is referring to how we care for elderly parents, it really should be on the other side of the tablets. Then it's not about recognizing that the father and mother created the human being. Right? It really is part of the social fabric of how society has been created, and it belongs in the mitzvah ben adam l'chaveru. And if it's about children, young children, teaching them how to talk and respect to their parents, then until they're 13, somebody mentioned before, they're not even obligated in mitzvot. So what's it doing here? And what does it mean? So that's, again, a part of that question. I want to go one step further. I said before that, of all the mitzvot that are missing in the Aseret HaDibrot, and if I had to take Kabed of Davicha V'Yetimecha out and I had to replace it with one, right? If we had that luxury and that authority. And I brainstormed with you, which was the mitzvah you would replace it with. I probably could probably argue successfully that the one mitzvah that really belongs in the Aseret HaDibot that's not there is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Because the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is so all-encompassing. It defines our lives. Our lives revolve around the mitzvah of learning Torah. We talk about Vigita by Yom HaMalayla, Pasuk and Yeshua, about engaging in study of Torah all day and all night. The notion that it's all-encompassing, connected kulam, it's equal to all of the other mitzvot, really is a defining characteristic of that which makes up our relationship with God. How much of our world revolves around the world of the Beit Midrash and the centrality of the world of the Beit Midrash, and how much of the conflicts today revolve around how much we should be in the Beit Midrash, how much we should be out in the world. Talmud Torah really is connected to Kulam. And yet, not only is it not in the list of the Aseret HaDibrot, I'm going to make another statement which is even more astounding, which is, it's not even in the list of the 613 commandments. Nowhere in the Torah does the Torah say you must study Torah. Let me do that again. Nowhere in the Torah does the Torah say you must study Torah, written or oral. What does the Torah say? So let's take a look at the Rambam in the laws of study of Torah. Here's the Rambam, Hilchot Talmud Torah, right? The laws of the study of Torah. And the Rambam says that there are essentially two mitzvot, two of all of the 613 mitzvot, there are only two that revolve around, biblical mitzvot, revolve around the mitzvah of study of Torah. Okay, the first, we have to see the source for. The first is to learn Torah, says the Rambam, right? To learn Torah, to study it. And the second, lechabed milamdev yodeha, to respect the teachers and purveyors of the knowledge of Torah. That's fascinating. The Rambam defines there are only two mitzvot in the Torah about Talmud Torah. One we have to discover, we don't know where it is. And the other is to honor those who convey Torah to us. Where did that come from? Lechabed milamdev yodeha? We have a mitzvah to honor those who keep Shabbos. We have a mitzvah to honor those who keep kosher. There's no such mitzvah. It's something we have to do, but there's no mitzvah to give kavod to somebody who fulfills mitzvah A, B, C, D, or E. But suddenly there's a mitzvah not only to learn Torah, but to honor those who study Torah or teach Torah. That's fascinating. And the Rambam, in his introduction, lists the number of mitzvot out of the 613. What's the source for the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? So the Rambam writes in the laws of Talmud Torah, Perek Aleph, he writes the following. He has a lot of other pieces here, which I pulled out because they're not relevant, but I just want to understand the core piece. Number one, Katan Aviv Chayav Lelamdo Torah. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah, says the Rambam, is defined as a child, one's father is obligated to teach them Torah. As it says in Shema, in Vayam Shema, v'limadetem otam et b'nechem daber bam. You shall speak them, teach them to your children to speak therein. What just happened? The Rambam defines the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, of learning Torah, as a mitzvah of teaching Torah. There's a mitzvah on a parent to teach the children Torah. Chayav lelamdot Torah. Katan aviv chayav lelamdot Torah. As it says, the opening statement of the laws of Torah, of the study of Torah. As it says, v'nimadotam otam et b'nechem, you shall teach them to your children. Or in the first paragraph of Shema, v'yam Shema, and the parent says, v'shinantam levanecha b'vidibartabam, you will teach them to your children and speak them. And the pshat of that is that it's talking about the mitzvah, the Shema. Actually, I would argue differently. I said the pshat is that it's talking about the Ten Commandments, because the Ten Commandments are first in chapter 5, in Dvar, and then it talks about Shema. But either way, it's Why is that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? And then the Rambam goes on to say that not only is there a mitzvah to teach our children Torah, mitzvah al kol chacham chacham Yisrael lelamed et kol haTalmidim. Paragraph two, there's a mitzvah on every Talmud Chacham to teach other children Torah, even if they are not his own children. As it says, Vishinantam Levanecha. And Levanecha there means not just our children, but even our students, because our students are like our children. So you understand what the Rambam has just defined. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah does not exist as a standalone mitzvah. It's fascinating. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah is, there's a mitzvah to teach Torah to our children, our grandchildren, and by extension, other people's children too. Well, how do I teach Torah if I don't know Torah? How do I teach Torah if I don't learn Torah? Oh, so the answer is, you have to learn, because you have to learn in order to be able to teach. And if you can't learn in order to be able to teach, so then you hire a teacher, and that works as well. And the rest of this paragraph, the rest of this chapter in the laws of Talmud Torah talk about how if you hire a teacher, what the obligation, etc. And then the Rambam goes on to say that there's a mitzvah to honor those teachers and those people who teach Torah to our children. And all the laws of honoring teachers and honoring Talmid Chachamim are borrowed literally verbatim from the laws of honoring parents. So the same way we're not allowed to sit in our parents' chair, we're not allowed to sit in our teacher's chair. The same way we're not allowed to call our parents by the first name, we're not allowed to call our teachers by the first name. And the same way we're not allowed to contradict our parents, we're not allowed to contradict our teachers. Literally copy-paste all the laws of honoring parents into the context of Talmud Torah, of how we treat milamdeha v'yodeha, those who teach Torah and those who are versed in Torah. It's fascinating. There is no mitzvah by itself to learn Torah. There's only a mitzvah to teach Torah, but I have to learn in order to be able to teach. So, I mean, it's remarkable. In the entire Torah, nowhere does the Torah say, you shall study Torah. Only you shall teach Torah to your children. I'll go one step further. Look at the context of Pesach, right? There's no holiday in the calendar, where there's no event in the calendar, and there's no moment in Jewish life where there's a greater emphasis on the relationship of transmitting Jewish knowledge from parents to children than in the context of the Pesach experience. And how does the Torah define, right, the four sons of the Haggadah, how does the Torah define that whole dynamic? Ki yishalcha bincha machar lemor mazot, if your children will ask, or when your children will ask tomorrow, saying, what is this? You shall say, this is what we did. Or vihigarata lebincha bayamahu, which is the foundation of the entire Pesach Seder. You will teach, you will demonstrate to your children, when your children will say to you, what is this ma'avodah hazot lachem? What is this service? Ma'edot ve'achokim ve'mishpatim? What, they'll ask the questions, you will give the answer. And our entire framework of Talmud Torah, of learning Torah, of teaching Torah, is built around how we answer the questions our children ask us. It's almost as if the Torah is saying that there will come a time in which our children are going to turn to us and say to us, how does this work? And we have to, and we have a responsibility to be able to answer that in depth. That's the essence of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. But wait a second. What do you mean there will come a time when our children will ask us, how does this work? Who says? Maybe they won't ask. Maybe they'll never ask. They never ask, right? So here I want to come back to what I have been alluding to before, and I haven't, but now we're going to put it on the table and make it clear. I would argue that the mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Em in the Aseret HaDibrot is not about honoring parents or having reverence for parents. That's true by extension, but it's much deeper than that. Because at its core, what the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is, or what the mitzvah of Kabbalah Tavicha V'Yatimecha is that we, every member of the Jewish people, every member of the people of Israel, have an obligation. When we stood at Har Sinai and we heard Hashem God command us, I am Hashem your God to get out of the land of Egypt. You shall not have any of the gods before me. You shall honor my name. You shall serve me. You shall keep the Shabbat, etc. We transmitted that to the next generation, to the next generation after that, the next generation after that. Flip it around now. The next generation. Where's the commandment? Where's the obligation to receive that Masoret, to receive that tradition, to hear it, accept it, buy it, understand it? Right? We're commanded to transmit that tradition to the next generation. Where's the commandment to receive that tradition from that previous generation? Flip it around. And that, says Rav Meidan, is exactly the mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Em. In this context, it's not honoring parents. It's on the right side of the tablet. It's on the Luach of Ben Adam L'Makom. It's on the tablet of the contrast of the Brit between us and Hashem God, because what it says is, after all of this Brit has been articulated, every member of the Jewish people has an obligation to honor the Masoret, the transmission of that Brit from generation to generation. And we do so by honoring our parents, because a parent represents that link, that Masoret, that tradition. And so we honor not the parent per se here in this context, but the tradition that they present to us, that they transmit to us, that they teach us, the Torah that they teach us. Go back to the, one second, let me just jump to this, to the end of this for a second. So go back to what I said before. Here's the framework. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God, I took you out of the land of Egypt. You shall not have any of the gods before me. You shall not worship idols. You shall respect the sanctity of God's name and place. You shall keep Shabbat. And you shall honor all of the above through the Torah that your parents will present to you and provide to you, and the Masorah that they will transmit to you. And that's how you take it from generation to generation. So this, it solidifies, it concretizes the Brit between us and God, because where do we get that from? Who's purveying to us that tradition? Who's giving us that information? So at Sinai, we stood there and we heard it from God. And the next generation? And the generation after that? Kabed et avicha v'etimecha means that's the mechanism by which you receive and obligate yourself in that Masoret. Learn it, accept it, because your parents are going to teach it to you. And so hidden in this is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and hidden in this is the respect for teachers, and hidden in this is the respect we have for parents, because parents represent to us not just the creation of life, but parents represent to us the link in the Masoret back to Sinai. They represent to us the link to that Brit of Hashem Elokecha. And so that's Kabbalat Avicha V'Yatimecha. Different way of looking at Kabbalat Avicha V'Yatimecha, different way of looking at the whole concept of what Kibbud Av V'Em is about. We have time. The continuation of this conversation would take us to various places where the Kibbud Av V'Em concept appears in Tanakh as a way of saying they either observed it or they didn't. As an example, take a look at the story of Yosef and his brothers. Right? So much of that story is a reflection of a violation of each one of the latter components of the Brit between us and each other. Right? The second Luach, Lo Tirtzach, you shall not kill. Okay, starts the story of Yosef and his brother starts with Shechem and starts with Shimon and Levi. Lotin af, commit adultery. And you shall not commit adultery. The story of Yosef and his brothers, that whole second half of Bereshit starts with Reuven and Bilhah. Lotignov, kidnapping. Well, I don't need to go further. I don't need to elaborate on that one. Right? Lotaneh b'rechayit shaker. Chazal say that Yosef brought evil reports to his parents. The lotaneh lotachmod, the enticement of Eshet Potifar. Lotachmod Eshet v'echa. Chazal said that Yosef was on the verge of committing a transgression with Eshet Potifar. And you know what saved him, says Chazal? It's a fascinating medrash. I want to show you that medrash. It's fascinating. What saved Yosef from the temptation of Eshet Potifar?
You can actually ask
exactly. Exactly. It's in, Rashi quotes it here. One such day, Yosef came into the house to do his work, and none of the people of the house were there. Says Rashi, what is lasot melachto? So, it's machloket. One says, he came in to take care of whatever he needed to take care of. And another opinion says, he came in to fall to the temptation of Eshet Potifar. Lasot tzrachav ima. But suddenly he was caught by the image of his father's face. And that's Gemara and Sota, meaning, and that's exactly what I'm describing, is that the concept of the Masoret is our link, not just to our parents, but to everything we represent for generations back. And we anchor ourselves in the Brit with Hashem because we are anchored in the transmission that we receive from our parents. That's Kaberet Avicha V'Yatimecha. It's much more, it's much bigger than caring for them when they're old or having respect for them and speaking to them in the right way when they're young, when we're young. It's, they represent the link of the transmission of the Masoret. They represent the Brit. And so you can't have a Brit that goes on for generations if you don't anchor it in the moment of honor your father and mother, honor Shema Bani Musar Avicha V'Alti Tosh Torat Imecha, honor the Brit, the covenant, the story of Jewish history which you receive from them, honor them and therefore what they represent to you. That's the context, what I wanted to share with you, what I called rethinking the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av V'Em and its place in the Ten Commandments. And I will stop here and answer questions. I see there are questions. Nikki, you want to start?
Yes. As a young teenager on Yom Kippur, Rav Soloveitchik got up to give his drasha before Yisker, and he pointed to the Seret Dibrot tablets that we had on top of the Aron Kodesh. And he said, I never forgot this. Do you know why Kibbutz Av V'Em is on the bottom and Lo Tachmod is on the bottom? Because they hold up all the others above them.
There you go. That's exactly right. I did not know that story, but that's exactly what I'm having expressed in this presentation, is that Kibbutz Av V'Em is the, it's the seal, it's the lock, it's the foundation of all that first brit
also
of the Masoret.
It's 100%
correct. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Right. Beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing that.
I think it has the same relationship to learning and teaching as Zachor has to Shamor.
Okay, I have to think about that one. I'd have to unpack that. It sounds very tidy, and right, but I'd have to think about that. I'm going to park that on my investigation. Shamor and Zachor is interesting. One's positive, one's negative, but also Shamor and Zachor are synonyms for each other.
No,
but
you can see
them
further, but they, of course, there's the traditional explanation. Your explanation provides that interpretation of Zachor.
Yeah, for sure. Any other questions? Okay, then I will thank you all for listening. Thank you all for, I hope this has been meaningful and helpful to you all. Thank you, Rabbi Kalman and Torah and Moshe for enabling us to come together and learn. And for those of you who would like to continue with our series on Kohelet, you're welcome to join us. And all of the other learning that goes on, kol hakavod, thank you to the Kalmans, and thank you to all of you for enabling this to continue open-ended. Thank you, Yishikar.
Thank you. It was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Okay. Very good. Next week, Dr. Aaron Kohler will be giving the Parsha Shiur. He's spoken also for us before. And, of course, I'll have my class on the Siddur tomorrow morning at 9:15 a.m. And Rabbi Liebtag will begin the week of Shiurim next week at 11:15. And as I mentioned at the beginning, next Sunday, we're having, I don't know if we call it the Yom Ayyum, but we're having a 5-hour program on coping and resilience in challenging times. I imagine most of you have seen the email we've sent out. We have 9 speakers, really a all-star lineup, if I can say that, psychiatrists and social workers and, people who are on the front lines dealing with issues of trauma and everything going on, unfortunately, in Israel. So I encourage you to come to that. That'll be next Sunday, February 11th, 9:15 a.m. till 2:15 on Sunday. Okay, and then we'll have all our regular shiurim. We should see you for good occasions. As always, please invite a friend to come and join. And I want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom and all the best and Besorot Tovot and Laila Tov, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you, Rabbi Shulman, again. And all the best. Okay, very good. Thank you.